Today on Movie While Us, we're going to review Before I Go to Sleep and Nightcrawler. It's time for Movie While Us. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie While Us is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Happy Movie While Us time.
Hello.
On this eve of Halloween.
Oh.
That's right.
That's when we're recording. I'm not quite sure when this episode's going to go out because we're recording a little bit earlier than normal because Rashmi's off to Tokyo.
I am.
For work, leaving me behind.
To do lots of movie watching?
No, are there any movies next week?
Yeah, I think there's two.
Well, Interstellar comes out.
I'm so excited.
I can't believe Joe's going to wait.
So, yeah, just so this kind of an inside kind of chat here. But yeah, so yeah, Interstellar is coming and, you know, part of the privilege of being a movie waller is that we get to see films a little early. Including some local screenings, and there is an early screening of Interstellar at the local IMAX, except if you do a little homework on IMAX theatres, there are two types. There are the real IMAX theatres where they have a 70mm projector on a 100-foot screen, and there are what they call the LIMAX, and they call them IMAX, but the internet being what it is calls them somewhat facetiously LIMAX. And what a LIMAX is, it's an IMAX licensed theater. They have the big kind of square aspect ratio movie, but it's a digital projection. They usually have a terrific sound system, and it's generally a very good experience. But you know, if you want to see the beauty of the real true 70mm IMAX format, which Christopher Nolan uses a lot in his movies, then the best place to go is to a true IMAX theater. So if you're interested, Google IMAX versus LIMAX, and the list of the real true 70mm IMAX theatres around the country will pop up. And there are none in San Diego. Boo.
They're not that far.
No, two in LA.
Yeah.
One's in Irvine and one's, I think, at Universal Studios. But if you haven't experienced it, I mean, Rashmi, we saw The Dark Knight Rises up in Irvine.
For the third time.
I'm a little bit of a Nolan fanboy here.
It was really impressive to watch it that large. I mean, it was literally larger than life, and it was very immersive. And especially the scenes that are actually shot in IMAX were even more thrilling to watch. I mean, in fact, you almost felt like you couldn't see the whole screen because it's so large and around you.
Which is normally kind of nausea-inducing, but it's not in this format. For me, the clarity of the image is just second to none. And you've seen these documentaries like Side by Side, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Where they talk about digital versus film. Christopher Nolan very famously likes film for many reasons, the workflow, the quality, and you can see why he's such a stalwart when you see a real 70mm projection. I mean, there's nothing like it.
So Yazdi, we're excited that you're going to see your first IMAX, real IMAX.
Yeah, I just hope, I like loud sound and I like your theater seats to vibrate with the explosions and so forth, or when the spaceship is taking off. But there is some such thing as too much of it. Eventually, it becomes too loud, and that gets really bothersome. I saw Mission Impossible 4 like that in one of those RPX cinemas, and the sound so amped up to like 12 or 14 when it should have been a 9 that it just ruined the experience for me.
Right.
I hope it's not the case with this IMAX.
Yeah, we saw, I think, the first Star Trek reboot with Chris Pine in that format.
Yeah,
and
it really
was like being yelled at for 2.5 hours. I mean, boy, did we come out with a headache.
I mean, you really feel like you need to carry a pair of extra socks in your handbag.
Because?
To put them in your ears.
Okay.
because
I was like, do your feet get cold when it gets loud or something? I mean, like, what? Why?
Strange biological response.
But a whole wool, none of my socks would fit in my ears. Maybe I should practice that.
Well, okay, maybe you could like hold them up to your ears.
Rashmi, why don't you just say earplugs?
Earplugs.
Okay. Wait, no, nobody else in the world uses socks that way.
Okay. Amy, a suggestion. Why don't we talk about the movie?
Yes, they both have to do about sleeping at night.
That's right.
Indeed they do. Where shall we start? We have Before I Go to Sleep and Nightcrawler.
Nightcrawler
it is.
So Nightcrawler is the directorial debut of Dan Gilroy, who previously was involved in writing several movies, including the movie Real Steel. This is his directorial debut, and he's also written this movie. And essentially, it's the story of a man in Los Angeles who is looking for a job, and through a series of circumstances, lands up finding a job working as a freelance photographer, but a very special kind of photographer, a photographer who is at a crime scene when the actual or soon after the crime has occurred. And essentially, he sets up a symbiotic relationship with the studio manager, which uses that news footage to show on their news broadcast the next morning. And eventually, as the movie proceeds, you get to find out more and more about this protagonist, and you find out that he will go to some pretty far extremes in order to get what he wants. And I don't want to give anything further away. The movie stars Jake Gyllenhaal, as well as Rene Russo, as well as Riz Ahmed. And as I said, it's both written and directed by Dan Gilroy. This movie is the big release of this weekend. What did you guys think about it? Is this one we should recommend people go out, rush out and watch on Halloween weekend?
Absolutely. I really enjoyed this film. This came out of nowhere for me. I hadn't heard any buildup of this movie. In fact, as we sat down to see the screening, they had a still kind of image of the movie poster up on the movie screen. And I really feel, for me at least, this came out of left side. I hadn't seen any trailers or any heard any buildup about it. Making me think it was kind of a smaller movie, but directorial debut, you say, Yesdi. What a terrific piece of work this is as a directorial debut. The movie has some problems, but I think ultimately it was a very satisfying piece of cinema. It was very well shot. We had a terrific performance by Jake Gyllenhaal here, and one of my favorite aspects of this movie was just how good an LA movie it was. I really, really felt the city coming through the movie as well. So I really enjoyed this movie.
So I always really have such high hopes for a Jake Gyllenhaal movie, because I think he is one of the great actors of our time. And I feel like every movie we watch him in, he's just getting better and better. So I'm happy to say that I wasn't disappointed by his acting and his performance. I was, however, a little bit disappointed by the movie, because to me, it felt a little bit unfinished and incomplete. And although it's a very good movie, I think I was just I was expecting something exceptional. So I think it's a case of expectations with this one for me. Very good movie. I just wanted a little bit more. And Joe, like you said, I think there were a few issues that I had with it.
Yeah, I'm with Joe on this one. I mean, and you, Rashmi, obviously. What a great little film this is. And I think, we watched so many movies recently. We watched, The Equalizer. We watched this kind of action thriller stuff. We saw even John Wick, which we, discussed just in our previous podcast. But see how much those other movies are straining to be riveting, to be thrilling. This movie is so effortless. It really conjures up a sense of dread and a sense of unpredictability. I mean, I did not have a clue where this movie... I had a general idea about this character, and I loved how this movie is never trying to be realistic. It's creating some other dimension almost where it exists, this strange dimension of very, very moral ambiguity, of people who are not who they seem. It kind of really evokes an otherworldly Los Angeles, like you said, this nighttime... I wouldn't have been surprised if suddenly vampires showed up in this movie, but that's actually even saying that is a disservice to the movie. So I think there's nothing safe about the movie. It has its own very own personal feel to it. There's something in the air about that movie which is uniquely that movie. And I'm so tired of safe movies. This is not a safe movie. It's just a delight. I love this movie.
I agree with you, Yazzie. Or I should say, I don't disagree with anything that you said. I think the minor issues I had were that the character is so pivotal to the movie that I feel that as a result, it became a little bit tonally inconsistent because the character's so strong. And for me, I couldn't decide if the movie wanted to be a thriller horror because some strange things happened at the beginning that don't really pan into anything at the end. And then there's so much about the character. And so I couldn't decide if it was trying to be a horror thriller or whether it was trying to be a dramedy, because this character is one of the best sociopaths I've seen in a movie for a long, long time. The character is so incredible, and I think Jake Gyllenhaal does such service to it, including the physical transformation of the loss of all of that weight. So good. So I think that's the issue I had. Some things didn't play out that felt like red herrings, and then I couldn't tell if it was trying to be horror thriller or dramedy character profile.
I know where you say that. I think at the beginning of the movie, there's a little bit of character establishment going on here with the character, and we don't really understand who this guy is, and I think that's to give him that little edge of danger. I mean, I think all the way through the movie, I had this overwhelming sense of how far will he go? Like, we've seen what he's capable of from the movie's very early portrayal of him and what he can do, but how far will he go in this pursual of news? And I think for me that was the overriding theme. I mean, as good as the Jake Gyllenhaal character was in this movie, I think in much the way that Gone Girl kind of had a bit of a go at the media for the portrayal of Ben Affleck here, this movie had a really, a really kind of a strong message, almost like an indictment of local news stories and how, how news is made. And, we've seen this kind of thing before, but, they were really having a little bit of a dig at the media and
the 24-hour news cycle, I think, right. Our insatiable appetite for it. Yeah, I agree.
I think it's actually all of those things. It's a satire, it's a comedy, it's horror, it's a thriller, it's a character study, it's a commentary on how we live today. I actually thought that particular piece was the weakest. I mean, it's great that, this movie is kind of making this commentary on how obsessed we are about news, and the more scandalous the better, and nobody cares about crimes which happen in the less privileged neighborhoods. People are more worried about that. Essentially, lives have a different price. Some lives mm-hmm. have a greater price than others. Mm-hmm. But that piece actually felt a little bit more packed to me, I think, than it should have been. But I just, for me, the reason the movie lives and dies by that main character, right? That main character is the movie. And as much as I credit Jake Gyllenhaal, who just, Prisoners last year, followed by Enemy this year, and now with this movie, it's amazing how these actors are just saying, enough of the mainstream, I'm just going to go and do really interesting, edgy stuff. And this is a very edgy movie role. But I think, to give credit where it's due, I mean, this character is written so deliciously, completely free from any moral standards. I mean, he has no moral compunctions, and it completely liberates this character, and it liberates the story to go in any direction, because he's so unpredictable. Very soon, like you said, Joe, that he will cross any line. He will do anything to get what he wants. And I don't know that we have seen somebody I don't even want to say deranged, because it's so controlled. Everything he does is very controlled. It's very forethought.
And it's also very true to the characters. There's a lot of integrity to the character. Correct. In the way that he debates everything with every other character in the movie. And you can see his underlying logic. Even though it's warped, there is a consistency to the way that he thinks that makes none of it unbelievable.
And makes it so comical, too. The other, I want to give kudos to Riz Ahmed. That character was so good as well. I mean, we saw Riz Ahmed in The Fundamentalist.
The Reluctant
Fundamentalist. What a 180 from The Fundamentalist this role is. And what range we see from Riz Ahmed. I mean, he was just such a great sidekick. I felt like he was such a good sidekick to this Jake Gyllenhaal character. And then I think for me, the genius of the movie was also around this 24-hour news cycle, but I thought it was almost taking a jibe at corporate America with the way that this character sets up his working style and his work ethic. Capitalism, yeah. So I thought that bit was very interesting and a good show.
No, I mean, this movie is flawlessly cast. I mean, I think the more interesting directors right now or filmmakers right now are saying, enough with tapping into the same tired pool of actors. I mean, Rene Russo has been away from cinema screens for what, 10 years? I don't know. When was the last time we saw her on a big television screen? I'm so glad somebody thought to say, forget, you know, everybody else who might have auditioned for this role. You know, I mean, she's perfect for that role. Riz Ahmed is perfect for that role.
Bill Paxton.
Yeah, I forgot about Bill Paxton. So, you know, I love the fact that Alexander Payne, you know, when he's making his own movie, you know, he's willing to pick, you know, whoever is right for the role. And likewise here, they could have picked a higher profile female lead, but it would have been so wrong. I think, you know, again, that Rene Russo character just fits.
Perfect. Yeah.
It was a well cast, you know, it was a great casting decision because of her physicality, because of her age, because of what that character needed to go through. I think, you know, she had that seasoned look about her. I want to say that in as nice a way as possible.
Weathered. But, I mean, she was weathered, but in a good way.
You know, that's what made her character interesting, again, because of the interplay between the two of them is there because of the setup in the movie. You know, it's just really, really nice little movie.
You know, there are two things which I think which really elevate this movie to anything else which is playing right now in terms of domestic releases. One is, you know, I mentioned this at the start, this movie seems to exist at some other plane altogether, some kind of almost Twilight Zone-like plane where things are, I don't know, it seems, it's all the events seem to play out in some other dimension. I mean, that tone that, you know, the movie is kind of, you are laughing at the movie very often, but you're laughing because you're uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you're just laughing because, you know, this character is so warped that you're laughing at his reaction to things.
Genuine observed humor in those moments.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is, it's a funny thing to say, but, you know, all year, and we've seen, you know, 100 superhero movies released in 2014. Of all the movies I've seen this year, I think the most suspenseful one I've seen is A Nightcrawler, which has to do with, you know, lead up to a television story, which is going to be projected on, you know, before the newsreel begins. And the movie, the pacing of that is so well done. It kind of reminded me of, you know, the movie Network from the 70s, which is considered a classic. And
the newsroom scene.
Yeah.
Is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah, the newsroom scene is so perfectly paced and cut and edited. I mean, it was genuinely suspenseful. I was, you know, I was like...
Yeah, no, it was a standout scene for me as well. I made a specific note about that when I got home because, you know, that's kind of what I was meaning earlier by saying, you know, this is a real dig at the way that local news is made, because it was really, you know, as dramatic a set piece as a piece of, you know, fiction / drama. I mean, that's what they were depicting, I think, was, you know, how salacious can we get in the depiction of this news story and how it works and the people pulling the strings behind the scenes and guiding what it is that we hear to kind of amp up the drama. And, you know, I see that all the time. I mean, I often comment to Rashmi when we watch local news, I'm like, this is absolutely terrible reporting here. I mean, you know, they'll take something benign and they'll twist it and warp it into these, you know, horrible, you know,
eight-hour cycle.
Well, but also panic-inducing moments. You know, it's like, do you know what's inside your refrigerator? You know, that kind of nonsense that you see, you know, on the local news. And this is, you know, that kind of thing, just, you know, who's in your neighborhood? Somebody got murdered on the other side of town, but we should all be afraid, you know.
Yeah. Okay, let's wrap this one up then. So, Yazdi, why don't you go first?
So, I mean, I can't say enough good things about this movie. People should really try it out. I had seen the posters for this movie for the last couple of months, and it, you know, Jake Gyllenhaal's face looks so weird. He's lost that weight, and he almost looks possessed. Sometimes I was wondering if he was playing an autistic character. I mean, there's so much going on in this movie. The central character is so interesting. So just from that perspective, people need to see it. And I think people need to also see it only to welcome this new talent. I mean, this is such an assured filmmaking debut from this person. This is a person who can create tension so wonderfully. I mean, scene after scene in the movie, I mean, I lost count. There's a great scene, almost like a Western showdown, which happens in this little, you know, Chinese restaurant
like
in the middle of the
takeout place.
A
yeah.
takeout place in the middle of the night. There's another one, you know, in this palatial home which has been attacked. I mean, this filmmaker really knows how to generate tension, and it's just a work of so much assurance. And the cinematography, we haven't even talked about the cinematography. You know, this is a person who has won Oscars, you know, for cinematography before. And Robert Elswit, I mean, the city, the nighttime in Los Angeles is as much a character as anything else in this movie. So just all around an A movie. I'm doing a disservice by not giving it a 9 out of 10, but I'm going to give it an 8.5 and then back down to 8.
Did you notice how Yazdi's got sneaky with his halves?
Yeah, he always puts one in every single time.
Joe?
You have to cut the scale in half.
It's more than an 8. It's more than an 8.
Yeah.
Not an analog scale. Yeah, in much the same way that the... what was the name of the Michael Mann movie with Tom Cruise a couple of years back?
Oh, Collateral.
Collateral. It had that very same kind of LA night feel. I feel like they were going for that here. And clearly the film's shot digitally. We were talking about that earlier on in the podcast. But it has that very, you know, day to night, or rather night to day type feel to it. So, you know, and it exists almost. Are there any daytime scenes in this movie? I don't recall.
Maybe one or
I
two
think there's
yeah.
a couple, yeah,
yeah.
But I mean, yeah, terrific shot, terrific sense of place. I mean, I really enjoyed spending, you know, my couple hours in LA, and I feel like it is the LA that we know. It's the city. It feels like driving around LA at night. So that was wonderfully done. But you know, there are so many good little points about this movie. I could go on for hours. I think the key take-home message here is, you know, like you said, Yazdi, there's some terrific talent on show here. This filmmaker is one to watch. I think he's got, you know, I don't know how long he worked on this project. I don't know how long he labored on it, but clearly he understands how to make movies that are suspenseful, dramatic, and interesting characters. So for me, this is, I feel like a 9 is not quite deserved, but to heck with it. To counter your 8, I'm going to give it a 9 because I enjoyed it that much.
So I'll say it again. This is one of the best Boil Your Bunnies crazy sociopaths we've seen in a long time, and he's really funny too. At times, there was such great tension that I found my pen in my mouth being chewed to death. And when I took it out, there was copious amounts of saliva on it. So much tension. This is a very good movie with some exceptional performances. 7 out of 10.
Really?
Almost an 8. Yeah. It just felt shy of greatness. I wanted it to be a little bit more. I wanted a little bit more from that Riz, Ahmed, Jake Gyllenhaal partnership that didn't quite play out for me. But a really good movie. I mean, it's a good movie.
And you do drool when you're tense.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, my jaw was hurting, and then I realized my pen was in my mouth.
Yeah, you know how there are a lot of people who say that they never go to the cinemas anymore because, number one, it's really expensive, and I agree with them. I have nothing to contest that. But then people say, you know, there's really nothing good playing in cinemas right now, something different. And I think if you want something good, something different, I mean, I can't give a better example than this movie. I mean, it's truly a fine piece of cinema. it's different. You haven't seen anything quite like it. Mm. You know, it's worth making the trip to the cinemas for.
I felt the same way coming out of this movie as I felt after watching Drive a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The one with Ryan Reynolds. Mm. You know, very different movies, but it was like you say, Yasdi, you come out of it thinking, I don't think I've had that feeling before coming out of a movie. This is something different. This is something new. This is something fresh. And you know, I love it when that happens.
You know, there's an amazing scene in the movie, and it's not even where something big is happening. It's Jake Gyllenhaal in his apartment watching TV, and he's ironing his shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that the iron that he uses is a particular type of iron, I mean, it just... I don't know if you guys noticed.
Not at all. Lost on me.
Really interesting choice of props and production and...
Well, what was peculiar about
it? Well, it was one of those really old irons, like it had been in his possession for the last 25 years. It wasn't a steam iron. It's one of those really old, solid, big, heavy things, mirror base that you know he's probably killed someone with.
I mean, the very first shot in the movie is that of an empty billboard in Los Angeles. And that's all that needs to be said. It's so beautiful. I mean, I hadn't even thought about it, but it's like, it starts off like a blank, you know, it starts off like a blank canvas. And it's amazing that the movie just introduces you to this lead character. You never find out how he came to be. You never found out. There's no background to him. There's no background to who he knows, who his friends are, what his family is, you know, any of that. And I love it. It just has so much confidence in this character.
Yeah.
There is no backstory needed. So again, you know, real confidence. And, you know, I'm looking at the list of movies that, you know, Robert Elswit, the cinematographer, has made. And it's like a who's who of the best photographed movies in the last 10 years. I mean, he did Boogie Nights, he did Magnolia, he did Punch Drunk Love. So obviously all of Paul Thomas Anderson movies, but he also did Good Night and Good Luck, Syriana, Michael Clayton, There Will Be Blood.
Gosh.
You know, The Town, the Ben Affleck movie. Oh,
brilliant movie.
So anyway.
If you're going to start out as a director, hire a good DP because, I mean, you know.
Yeah.
This guy knows how to set up the movie visually and you know, a lot of the story is told visually. I mean, I think that's always an overlooked thing.
And do you think it was sponsored by Mustang?
It's sponsored by a lot of things.
That was a Dodge Charger.
Oh, okay. Don't send me hate mail.
Yeah, it was for other car geeks, it was a Dodge Charger SRT8. But
oh, okay.
And yeah, it's got a Hemi, but that's a car nerd thing.
And
obviously not sponsored by Mustang then, clearly.
Not a Mustang.
But there's a lot of very blatant product placement.
But I noticed the iron.
Yeah.
I mean, how we play to the stereotypes.
Men are from Mars.
I mean, there's this other scene in this movie. I don't want to ruin it for anyone, but it's just a dinner scene in a Mexican restaurant, and it's so brilliantly written.
Oh, it's so good.
It's so perfect, and that scene just honestly just floats the movie up into this weird place of, you know, biting humor. It's laughing at them. It's laughing with them. It's kind of in this bizarro world. It kind of almost
and it's scary.
It's so well done, and it's that perfect. You know, it's well written, well directed, and well acted.
Okay, so I think this podcast gets the prize for talking about the movie way after the podcast ended.
Yes,
the review.
And I think Jake Gyllenhaal is a good chance if this movie catches steam of getting some end of year awards recognition.
You know, I was thinking that, Yasdi. I was thinking that I think he'll get love, but no Oscar love. But I think he'll hopefully be recognized.
All right, let's move on.
Yes.
Okay. Before I Go to Sleep. So I think
that's the name of the movie.
Well, actually, yeah. It, what time is it now? It's 9:05. I'm not ready to sleep yet. So Before I Go to Sleep is a thriller starring Nicole Kidman, Colin Firth, and Mark Strong. The IMDb description of the movie is, so the basic setup is, a woman wakes up every day remembering nothing as the result of a traumatic incident in her past. One day, new terrifying truths emerge that force her to question everyone around her. As I mentioned, it's got a great cast, Nicole Kidman, Colin Firth, Mark Strong, and it's directed by Rowan Joffe. I don't know how to pronounce that. Joffe?
Yeah, I think he's the son of Roland Joffe.
Ah, okay. Well, he's got a pretty good filmography here, with involvement as a writer in a lot of TV and, including 28 Weeks Later. But directorially, I think he's done a movie called Brighton Rock. I'm not familiar with that. Have you heard of that?
I think it came out recently.
It sounds like an English movie.
Yeah. Isn't that a Neil Simon play? I'm sorry, carry on.
It's a candy. It's actually, it's we call it rock. It's because it's hard and it breaks your teeth.
And it's sold in beaches like Brighton.
In England. So, before I go to sleep, who would like to rush me? You going to go first?
Sure. So, this is 50 First Dates meets Groundhog Day. I just didn't connect with this movie. I don't think it's a terrible movie, but it's not a very good one either.
So the premise of this movie is that this woman wakes up every morning and everything that she has known up until that point is erased. So every morning when she wakes up, it's a blank slate, right? And that should immediately remind you of Memento, which was almost exactly the same theme. And, in the first 10 minutes of the movie, I was thinking, well, okay, how is this movie going to differentiate itself from Memento? And I'm getting a little tired of these movies which play with memory. And when you play with memory for fun, it can be really, an altogether great experience. It's based on a very famous novel or a pretty popular book at least. And so I don't want to lay the blame at the feet of the director, but I think this is a very, very good back of the plane movie. It's one of those thrillers which used to be made a lot in the early 80s. It's proficiently made and poor Nicole Kidman does her best. I mean, she's sobbing her heart out through most of it, soldiering on through this movie. And, as these kinds of thrillers go, it's serviceable. It could have been so much better. As all my report cards said, can do better.
Joe.
It's interesting you said back of a plane because, before I go to sleep is about the time you should watch this movie. I think the movie realized, remember the movie from a couple of years ago with Vincent Cassel and Jennifer Aniston, Derailed?
Love that movie.
Well, it didn't work for a lot of people because the moment you kind of figure out what's going on here, the movie kind of loses its bite and it's you're just waiting for the reveal. And this movie tried to play suspensefully, but I think its big secret was very obvious to me at the beginning. So I wasn't surprised by that. Yeah, it wasn't the kind of, oh my God, kind of moment where, the twist in the story is revealed. And, I think because of that, it wasn't as effective as it could be. Like you say, yes, it was competently made, but ultimately a little unsatisfying. I didn't hate it. I wished I hadn't guessed the plot, and I think it kind of got me. It would have been a lot more effective for me in that regard if I hadn't.
So I didn't guess the plot. I was still surprised, but I wasn't surprised at the way we got there because everything was a deliberate twist and turn, and there are enough red herrings here to fill a can of, food for months and months. I found it all just too melodramatic and quite dull, to be honest. But I think the main issue I had with the movie is that we're not really given much information to piece everything together, and it feels like we're actually the character going through the process as opposed to watching a movie about the character who had this experience. And I think that the movie, like you said, Joe, I'll say it in another way, the movie's almost trying to be too clever and gotcha, but it takes cheap thrills. Every 15 minutes I counted, there was a horrible gotcha moment, like a jump out of your seat moment. So I don't know. I just think I agree, Yazdi. Could have done better.
I mean, I did not guess the reveal because, I mean, let's face it, there's all of four main characters in the
right.
movie. So it's got to be one of those four people, right? So, and I think the movie kind of plays with that because you think, oh, it's this person.
Right.
And then, like, and then you're told, no, it's not. It's actually person B. And then you figure, oh, it's person C. And then it loops back and it says, no, aha, it was person A all along. So I think it kind of caught me unawares from that perspective. And I do agree the movie, and again, I don't know if it's the script or this director or the original source material, but the movie is very obsessed about being a thriller more than anything else.
And almost horror at one stage, like she's walking down the stairs and the music's playing in the background and we see her feet and the steps are creaking.
Yeah, but
boom, gotcha. You know, but, it's like, ugh, really?
But I think there is a time when you don't want to watch, you know, The Tree of Life. And there's a time you don't want to watch, you know, you don't want to watch 10 years, 12 Years a Slave. And
Debbie Does Dallas.
Yeah. But if you just want...
Remember a time you don't want to watch Debbie Does Dallas?
No. I'm not going to go there. But... But I think if you just want a 90-minute silly movie which is going to keep you reasonably engaged, I just wish there wasn't so much sobbing. For a movie which is just trying to be like this early 80s thriller, there was a lot of sobbing. I just wanted to say, shake Nicole Kidman and say, stop crying, it's okay, you know. And
so, I felt like she literally had one expression on her face, which was that smell the fart.
No.
Expression.
No,
and
she did a good job.
You know,
here.
She did a good job, but she had that kind of really strange, confused, where am I look on her face throughout the entire movie. It was such a one note performance.
No, that's
she's a
role
good actress. She's a good
for,
actress.
Rashmi, that's what the role that's
I know, all. But what I'm saying is it was so one note. It was such a one note performance. And
because
I think if it
she
hadn't
was waking
been
up, it's like criticizing Bill Murray for having the same expression every morning when he woke up in Groundhog Day. I mean, you know, that's the whole point. It's like, you know, here we go.
Yeah, I don't agree with you. But I seriously think if it wasn't for Colin Firth, it would literally send you to sleep.
No, it wouldn't
send. No, I mean, I think the movie was reasonably well paced, and it knew not to, you know, overstay its welcome. It had a reasonably short running time, and I think, you know, in its favor, it moved through what it needed to at a very nice pace, so that I never actually felt bored by what was going on. Each day when she woke up, we knew that there were going to be, you know, this kind of sequence of events that leads her back to kind of remembering what's happening, that, you know, and allows her to build kind of a memory, which I thought was a very clever little device. And in much the same way that Memento did that via, you know, Guy Pearce's, you know, tattoos and the various little things that he had around him that would help him figure out where and who and why. But it was nowhere near as clever as Memento. I mean, you know, Memento's big gimmick, I think, was not necessarily the memory, but it was the way that the story almost played out in reverse. You know, and yet, you know, we still got a standard story arc which went from backwards to forwards, but the movie and its scenes were cut and written so that they were in a reverse chronological order. So that it didn't have that level of, you know, ingenuity around it. It felt very conventional as a thriller.
Yeah.
It was almost like, remember those Twilight Zone episodes? You know, it kind of could have been something like that.
Yeah, this could have been a made-for-TV movie if it wasn't for Colin Firth, I think, and Nicole Kidman and the heft they carry as actors. I think the other problem with it is the time scale. I didn't quite figure out what time scale we were playing with. At one point, we're 2 weeks earlier, then we're some other time, then we're some other time. And then it didn't make sense that this all happened over a period of 7 days maybe. So I didn't quite get the time scaling and the pacing.
3 weeks. I think it happened over 3 weeks.
Okay.
But I don't know. I mean, compare this to something even like Edge of Tomorrow, which came out earlier this year, where it's the same concept. You know, he keeps dying again and again and again. It's kind of
so fun.
Yeah, that was so fun. I mean, so I want to ask you guys this question. So the premise of the movie is every morning she wakes up and she's completely forgotten everything. And, you know, her husband goes off to work and she's reminded by her psychiatrist that, you know, he calls her every morning and says, I know what's happening to you. You've made a little video log. Go look at it, right? My question is, what happens on Saturdays and Sundays?
That's the plot hole that I was looking at.
I'm like, you know, there's got to be a day when her husband does not go to work. You know, what happens on those days? So anyway,
I think it could act. I mean, now that you think about it, it could probably work. They would just go through their normal routine, and then Monday morning she would get her memory back.
I suppose.
But yeah, you know, there were a few little misgivings like that in the plot, and that, like I say, that's why it is a movie that you need to see when you're just a little drowsy. And you know, if you scrutinize it too much, it does unravel. And you know, I feel bad for the movie in that regard, because I think, you know, you can kind of figure out what's going on, and that takes away from the suspense of it all.
Yeah, I almost feel like Naomi Watts would have been a better character.
They're kind of interchangeable for me.
I almost felt like Nicole Kidman was trying to be Naomi Watts. Very strange.
Another blonde Antipodean.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Please let's wind this one up before I fall asleep. Yazdi.
Yeah, so I think, again, Friday night, Saturday night, back of a plane, you're with friends, you want to watch a silly, cheesy, fun little thriller where you're trying to piece what's exactly going on. Not bad at all. It's not offensive. The reveal came unexpected to me for the most part. It plays along nicely, and it has the good sense to end in 90 minutes. 6 out of 10.
Joe.
You know, a reasonably effective thriller. You know, again, you know, it doesn't stand up to a lot of analysis. And if you're trying to do any kind of analysis as you go along, you will feel a little disappointed and perhaps annoyed by some of the little plot holes and contrivances. But, you know, nonetheless, I think, I'm with Yazdi on this one. I think this is an adequate, you know, bit of time spent at the movie theater. I didn't hate the time. I didn't hate the movie. Very, very competently made. And that for that, it gets a 6 out of 10.
There's just enough to keep you engaged in guessing about who the good and bad guys are. And there are some good twists and turns, but this isn't a winner for me. This one almost sent me to sleep. A melodramatic thriller that just isn't very great. 5 out of 10. It's very average.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I think the concept is interesting, but yeah, Yazdi, I think this memory loss as a plot device is done once too many times. You know, my day job actually involves memory research, and, you know, biologically what's going on in this movie isn't possible. You know, you either have the ability to store memories, which you know would mean they would carry over to the next day, or you don't have the ability to store memories where you just live in the present, and it wouldn't have to be an overnight thing, it would be the next day. So, you know, that's biology, and so this movie doesn't stand up to any kind of, you know, there's no basis in reality for what happens here, and that's the truth in a lot of movies.
Or Godzilla.
I know, but anyway, it's just like, again, it's a plot device.
Yeah.
It's one of those kind of one-line concept movies. Somebody, you know, woke up one day and got out of the shower and said, what if there was a woman who every day when she woke up couldn't remember anything from the day before? And then somebody's turned that into a script. And that's what you get here.
Yeah, I mean, people should really read. The New York Times has like a 4-paragraph review of Before I Go to Sleep, and it's just hilarious. People should read it. I mean, they're complaining about the same thing. He's like, they're tired of this damsel in distress afflicted with that tired soap opera device, amnesia.
Right.
You know? Yeah. Yes, you should post it to our Facebook page.
Yeah.
And it's the funny thing about amnesia is that over the course of 90 minutes, you know, you gain your memory back because that's what the plot requires. So, you know, it's we've seen this thing time and time and time again since the 70s.
Yeah, what really made me laugh, though, I thought what was comical, and I didn't know whether this was a jibe at Nicole Kidman, was that, you know, she's found near to dead in a mannequin factory. Yeah. And I was thinking, well, she's rather pale and she's very skinny. Step and she really looks quite dead anyway. So I'm surprised that anyone found her. So I wasn't sure if that was...
Yeah, and she's nobody's as Botoxed in Hollywood as Nicole Kidman.
She still looks good.
I just mean her face looks frozen. No, it's a very good frozen face, but it's still a frozen face.
One thing I forgot to mention, I'm going to throw it in now anyway, is the movie lost at least a point with that horrendous final scene, it would have been much better served
without it altogether. Yeah.
Cut that away and left some ambiguity around what was going on. I think the most effective thrillers, especially when they're psychological, leave you with that, what the hell happened there? We don't really know. And I wish they had not put that in there. It would have augmented it at least a point for me.
Yeah, I wish the movie had just owned up and said, all you want to be is a psychological thriller.
Yeah.
You know, and not try to also be this emotional whatever crap was also going on in the side.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, I mean, the more I think about it, the most, one of the worst movies of this year is The Equalizer. If you think the last scene in this movie is bad, see that last scene with Denzel Washington and Chloe Grace Moretz in The Equalizer. I was like, I physically wanted to run to the back of the cinema screen and chop off that last scene, like cut off the reel, you know, or delete that last scene. It was so bad. It was like, oh, you're ruining an already bad movie. But anyway,
all right,
I digress.
All right. Well, let us know what you think of these movies. Mail at moviewallers.com, twitter.com/moviewallers, and facebook.com/moviewallers as well. I'm going to give another little shout out to our good friends over at wrangle.com, RANGL.com. They do a terrific, they have a terrific website where you can do online debates. You can, their tagline is clash, justice, and honor. And if you have a question that you want to put out to the world and have other people, random strangers, friends, family, whoever, weigh in on the debate, put it up on Wrangle. That's RANGL.com. They have a whole section dedicated to movies with the Movie Wireless logo, so do head over there. It's great fun. And we thank them for their support of Movie Wireless. Until our next episode, it is Too Many Movies and Too Little Time. A good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.